Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kian. Today, we'll discuss the article by Ma et al. Titled, Electrophysiology of Human iPSC-Derived Cardiomyocytes. This article published online ahead of print September 2nd, 2011. My guests today are Associate Editor Junichi Sadoshima, authors Craig January and Brad Swanson, and leading expert Diego Friedenreich. Let's get started.
So recent discovery of iPS cells allow us to generate human cardiomyocytes from patients. These iPS cell-derived cardiomyocytes are useful to study the property of normal and diseased human cardiomyocytes and also be useful for drug discovery. In addition, iPS cell-derived myocytes may be useful for regeneration therapy. Generation of myocytes from ES cells or iPS cells has been reported previously, where myocytes can be made through embryoid body formation and selection with drug resistance genes. However, existing procedures generally allow only a small number of cardiomyocytes, and the preparation is often contaminated by non-myocytes. In this study, the authors developed a method to obtain large number of myocytes with more than 98% purity from human iPS cell line. Electrophysiological studies showed that these myocytes exhibited the property of human cardiomyocytes. The study suggests that the human cardiomyocyte can be generated from human iPS cells at high purity and large numbers, and that these cells may be used for many areas of cardiovascular investigation. Now, first of all, I'd like to congratulate the authors for their fantastic achievement. And let me kick off by asking the authors this question. What is the most important methodological difference between this study and the previous method as to how to make pure myocyte preparation in large numbers from ES cells or iPS cells?
The methodology here that's key was recombinant therapy to allow us to create a selection for cardiomyocytes over non-cardiomyocyte cell populations. And then separate from that were large-scale culture capabilities in order to produce large numbers of myocytes. I think one needs large numbers of myocytes for many potential ways to evaluate the cells. And so these are both contributing factors.
The iPS cells are very different. Colonies are very, very different one from another. So I was wondering, I wanted you to elaborate on how universal this methodology that you described would be for different colonies from patient-specific iPS cells, for example.
iPS lines vary from, to some extent, from batch to batch, from who's making them. And so there is variability present in iPS lines. Lines developed for this paper are clonal lines, and ultimately we used one clone to develop the cardiomyocytes. And so we think and actually test for quality control when the lines are generated, and so that in principle, frozen batch to batch should be similar.
I just wanted you to comment on what stage do you think these cardiac myocytes are?
That's a good question, and one that we are asked. And I think everybody in the field is struggling with how to make cardiomyocytes more mature. When we were doing the experiments, there were some hints that these were reasonably mature cells. And I'm not saying they're adult-like, but that we were perhaps approaching neonatal-like cells. One of them was the full complex of currents that are present. Some of the currents we found have been difficult for other labs to show. IK1 is one of those currents. The second one is that the cells, when you look at their size and you measure them by cell capacitance, are basically twice or so the size of what's been reported thus far with more traditional ES and iPS approaches to making cardiomyocytes. So they're simply bigger. Bigger correlates, at least according to the literature, correlates with more mature cells as well. we're exploring other ways of growing these cells to try to make them more mature?
It's a very good question, Diego. And one of the interesting aspects of their, what you might call immature state, is their automaticity. But in their use as a tool on a number of measurement and analysis platforms, it's actually a bonus. Having that, you know, automaticity and them being able to, you know, drive their own beating is important for them to be able to be used as a tool on a number of analytical platforms, which have been proven to be very useful for being predictive models for cardiotoxicity and arrhythmogenesis.
You described that your preparation is kind of a mixture of ventricular cells, atrial cells, and pacemaker cells. I know it's challenging, but is there any way to control to get a homogeneous population for future, like a biochemical analysis?
It's a goal that I think everybody who's in this field has. It's clear that we can produce with them methods that are in this paper, large numbers of, we think, somewhat more mature, somewhat larger cardiomyocytes. But it's also clear that we've still have the problem of a mixed population. They're predominantly ventricular, but there are also nodal and atrial cell types based on the electrophysiology, based on action potentials that are present in the population. Are there ways to try to drive differentiation to a single cell type? At least in principle, there are ways. So you need tissue-specific markers that you can either measure or use to drive differentiation to get to a single population.
But you described that you have to wait 30 to 32 days before you dissociate cardiomyocyte. But I'm curious why you have to wait such a long period of time.
The day was chosen because in our differentiation process, we wanted to ensure that the cells would have the necessary functional activity that people would want. They would express critical ion channels that people would be using or looking at in their analyses. When you make something in a manufacturing setting, you need to make sure that you can reproduce it and make it work every time. So we chose a date that we were comfortable with, where we knew the cells would be at a point every time we made them that they would have response to all the necessary compounds and would show activity for all the necessary and characteristic ion channels that you would expect in a cardiomyocyte.
I'll add that this also is the time frame that you need for the loss of embryonic genes and the development of cardiac gene expression. That's not in this paper, but this is all what goes into why we chose that period of culture.
So I'm curious, do these cells express, for example, receptors, the same level as the human endogenous cardiomyocyte?
ES and iPS-derived cardiomyocytes, for example, are responsive to isoproterenol, and so they have some of these signaling pathways intact. Some of them have calcium-induced calcium release, so some of the EC coupling mechanisms that you would expect have already been demonstrated.
In addition, these cells can be used for a model for cardiac hypertrophy as well, where you would induce an in vitro type hypertrophic response by adding endothelin 1 and looking for the upregulation of what you would consider hypertrophic gene programs such as AMP and BMP.
Can I raise that question about what the future directions of this work would be?
The future directions are a lot. One of them are studies in depth of gene expression patterns in these cells, both the loss of embryonic genes and the development of cardiac-specific genes. A second area is how to make them more mature. This involves culturing both for longer periods of time, culturing in different types of medium, but also culturing them in tissue engineering models that try to get cells to resemble working myocardium.
It's really exciting, and I really thank Craig and Brad and Diego. I really look forward to seeing the future development of this powerful technology.
And to our readers, thanks for listening to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast series.